Case number 08-5479, National Air Traffic Controllers Association, AFL-CIO, appellant, versus Federal Service Impasses Panel et al. Mr. Osborne for appellant, Mr. Blanford for appellees.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm William Osborne. I'm here for the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. We are here seeking a resolution of a single issue of law, whether federal courts have jurisdiction to resolve a purely legal question having to do with the jurisdiction of the FSIP to resolve collective bargaining impasses between the Federal Aviation Administration and labor organizations representing FAA employees, where the FSIP itself has twice declined to even rule on the matter of its jurisdiction, and where the National Air Traffic Controllers Association is not seeking review of or relief from any decision by the FSIP or by the FLRA.
Except future decisions. Right. Yeah, that's you're
saying. There are no future decisions.
Well, if there's no future decision, then why isn't the case moot with the resolution of the previous one?
The case is not moot, Your Honor, because there are 22 bargaining units consisting of 30,000 FAA employees whose collective bargaining will be governed by the answer to this question.
A dispute still pending, or has it been
before the FSIP? No.
Not in this case, right?
No.
It's over.
All right. And is there a dispute between the FAA and its employees?
There are extant unresolved collective bargaining negotiations. My understanding is over 20 bargaining units and thousands of employees.
And it's the impasse in those bargaining?
I don't think there's an impasse. I can't say to Your Honor that there's an impasse in some or all of those, but the necessity of having the FSIP involved sometimes precludes an impasse in this way. In collective bargaining, frequently the parties will be going back and forth at each other and get to a loggerhead, and they'll say, well, you know, you've got my best, blah, 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 and the other side said, I don't think so, da, da, da. But then wiser heads prevail. They say, shouldn't we make our own agreement rather than some unknowing third party? I mean, the beneficial effects of having an umpire include resolving the impasse, but they implicate the entire system.
So the FSIP actually can prescribe the result, not just mediate.
Yeah, correct.
So is the difference between this case and the situation before us the last time around in NADCA 2? Okay, because the decision, the panel's decision was identical there and here, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Forgive me.
The FSIP. The FSIP's decision.
The FSIP's issued two decisions, one in 2006.
They're identical.
One in 2006.
Yeah, they're word for word the same. And in the first time around, in our first decision in this case, we said we had no jurisdiction. And is the difference between that case and this case is the way you wrote the complaint?
No.
No?
The difference between the two cases is the first case was a LEADM case, and we thought we had a very good LEADM case, but LEADM cases are hard to make. They have a very heavy burden of proof. LEADM cases challenge specific, outstanding decisions of an administrative agency, here the FSIP, and we were seeking to have those specific decisions by the FSIP reversed. A panel of this court, including Judges Ginsburg and Randolph, decided we hadn't met our burden in LEADM, which is a tall burden. This is an entirely different case, although it arises in a familiar circumstance.
Isn't that because there you characterized what the FSIP had done as a decision not to invoke its jurisdiction, and here you have not?
No. In this case, Judge Tatel, there not only are we not seeking relief from the from any specific decision of the FSIP or the FLRA, but there are no decisions out there available. So it's not as if we're trying to be clever, that is to say, We're not being semantic about this. We are asking for a declaratory.
I wasn't suggesting that you were just playing with words. That wasn't my question.
I'm sorry, Judge. Forgive me.
So you're telling me that the difference in the way you drafted the complaints is insignificant?
No, I'm saying that that the complaints were drafted on the basis of two different factual contexts. And they happened at different times. They have some similarities, Your Honor. I'm not suggesting they're...
When this current complaint was drafted, what was the status quo then?
When this current complaint was drafted...
Wasn't there a matter... Was it before or after the FSIP said again for the second time?
After. And after that, the FAA then went unilaterally implemented these draconian rage reductions, et cetera. And we went to Judge Collier and said, Your Honor, we would just like an answer to the question. This is a 13-year-old question. It involves 30,000 people. It satisfies all the federal subject matter jurisdiction and prerequisites of declaratory judgment. We just don't think that this question should go unanswered for another 13 years, basically.
If I understood your answer to an earlier question, though, the disputes that you would have put before the FSIP had they not rebuffed your request are in some bargaining unit still alive, still.
No, the FSIP, I may not be as clear as I could be, Your Honor. I don't know of an extant impasse in any of those other 21 bargaining units today as we speak. There could be, there could not be. I don't want to represent more than I'm familiar with. That would trigger an ongoing FSIP proceeding. But I don't know whether any of these other 21 bargaining units...
State the issue that you want the court to decide.
Whether a district court has federal...
No.
The underlying
issue that Judge Ginsburg is asking you about.
Okay.
What is the issue that you put before the district... Forget about the district court's jurisdiction. What is the issue that you're...
In this case,
yeah.
Whether the Federal Service Impasses Panel has jurisdiction to resolve collective bargaining impasses between the FAA and labor organizations representing their employees.
And the reason you raise that is because they said we don't know.
Correct. And we tried to get an answer from this court in a lead-em case, and we failed, okay? But the issue is still there, and it's a critically important question. And incidentally, I'm not sure I understand... Okay.
But here's the reason I was asking
this
line of questioning. If you take an impasse to them and they decline, as they did, to provide their services, so now there's nothing, you say there's no specific dispute anymore. You come to the court, you say tell them that they do have jurisdiction, that they're making a mistake in declining their services, at which point, will you then be able to take that judgment, go back to the FSIP with the very same dispute that they refused to hear before?
No. Okay. We're thinking prospectively here, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
But some of these impasses may still be out there.
I have no reason to believe they are at all. What we want is a confirmation of what we understand the law to be going forward. We're not trying to, if that's what you were worried about, we're not trying to go back and reopen anything. And the FSIP...
Going forward, you're just anticipating there'll be future impasses.
Of course. It's part and parcel of collective bargaining. And the FSIP could have said, we have jurisdiction and we decline to exercise it. That is not what they said. They said, we don't know.
So they do have...
And we want an appropriate forum to decide it.
But is it clear they have discretion if they do have jurisdiction to decline?
In some circumstances, sure. Well, and also, I'm sorry, Judge Taylor.
Suppose they had said, we don't have jurisdiction.
Pardon me?
Suppose they had said, we do not have jurisdiction.
Well, then...
That would not be... You couldn't challenge that, right?
Well, we would then be in the context of Brewer, and we would be in the lead-em situation, and as the court's already... See, that's a tough row to hoe. I'm not prepared to concede the point. But when you have an extant decision, then it seems to me it's unreviewable unless you can satisfy lead.
They made a decision. The only reason you have a case is because they made a decision saying that we're just not going to decide one way or the other whether on FAA matters we can take jurisdiction. That's
until,
a decision.
Until Judge Randolph, they said, another appropriate forum decides that question.
But it says, quote, the panel... quote, declines to assert jurisdiction.
On resource grounds.
Declines to assert jurisdiction.
They say that the reason that they are not exercising jurisdiction is they don't know whether they have it. That's
my
understanding.
They don't want to expend resources if they...
Right, exactly, in an academic exercise. And if this court is not an appropriate forum to decide this question, I don't know what is. And
I don't see why is it that the FAA or the impasse panel and the FORA are parties to this litigation when the dispute, as you frame it up, is not with the impasse panel, it's not with the FORA, it's only with the FAA.
The dispute is between the FSIP and the FAA and NATCA because it's the FSIP's jurisdiction that is the common element to all of this. It's their jurisdiction. They're not spectators.
But the FAA says you don't have standing to sue it in this case.
I think we have we're a proper party to bring this declaratory judgment action, and they're a proper party to it.
Why the FAA?
Because they are the other party most directly affected by the declaratory judgment. We were trying to make sure that they had an opportunity to weigh in on the question.
Well, so they induced the FSIP to take the position
precisely.
They did. Yeah.
Precisely.
Okay. Mr. Osborne, is it Florida National or Florida Board case?
Yeah, Florida Board, right.
Yeah. Interprets LEADM as being inapplicable when there's no question concerning representation. And I take it we crossed that bridge in Brewer in another case and said LEADM lays across the length and breadth of the act.
I agree.
If we were in the 11th Circuit, would that be then a slam dunk for you? Is that all the problem is here?
You know, in this life, I haven't seen a slam dunk in so long, Your Honor. I'm not sure I'd recognize him.
Would you get over your LEADM problem?
Yeah, I think
because there is no question concerning representation here.
No, this is a collective bargaining question, not a representational question.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly. And one of the things I was thinking, kind of putting myself in your positions when I was preparing, and I'm past my time, was that, you know, if I was trying to think, okay, this is a good solution, we should just decide the case and grant declaratory judgment. But are we opening the door? Is the court opening the door to, you know, 50 other cases? Why would they do that? You know, and if you think about it, that Florida board case was decided in 1982, and there's been one other case in 27 years.
I must say that on reflection, I this is less of a question and more an observation. I just don't really see this any longer as a LEADM versus Kine case. That was a unit determination, and unit determinations were considered non-final rulings. And you can, the employer, if the employer disagreed, all the employer has to do is refuse to bargain, and then the NLRB will decide it. So it wasn't a question of whether, it was a question at what point and in what forum the issue was going to be decided. This case, there is a labor analogy, it seems to me, under the NLRB and this is one of the reasons I asked you the question I did about why the other party, and that is the Steelworkers trilogy. This seems to me to be an analogous to somebody coming in and trying to get an order requiring arbitration. And the impasse panel, you know, is in the nature of arbitration, and maybe the employer defends on the basis that there's no, you have no right to arbitration, and the court decides it. That's the Steelworkers trilogy, and that's a common litigation in labor matters, right?
And so, the difference is we're looking at a question of statutory construction, federal
as opposed to a term in a collective bargaining agreement. That's
right,
the difference.
The Supreme Court in the Steelworkers trilogy called the common law of the shop.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Osborne,
I'm sorry, Judge.
In the prior case, in your was it your own personal appearance here before? But in any event, NATCO's.
I was here before, Your Honor.
Judge Edwards said, you're remitted to the labor board type remedy, right? You go and through an unfair labor practice proceeding, you can get raise the issue that you're now raising, just as under LEADM you could that way raise a LEADM issue. And surely he said that fully aware that the general counsel may not issue a complaint.
I think Judge Edwards may have been more optimistic about the goodwill of the FAA at the time than it turned out to be. There's three answers to that, I think, Judge. First of all, whatever Judge Edwards wanted NATCA to do, NATCA did, for all the good it did him. Second of all, an interesting history lesson for me. I went back in researching the case law. If you look at the D.C. Circuit decision in Leadham, which was affirmed by the Supreme Court, it's at 249 U.S. 490, 1957. The court said you don't have to, in almost a perfectly analogous situation where the employer can just, you know, ignore everything and you never get to the board. What they did not require going to the board, and they described it as saying you don't have to do that where it is, quote, remote and conjectural. And I'm not saying Judge Edwards was right. I think he was overly optimistic. But that Leadham decision of the D.C. Circuit, I think, is a good answer to that. Another answer is, even if there was some other remedy out there, right? Federal Rule 57 says on its face for declaratory judgments, the availability of an alternative remedy is not dispositive.
And besides that, I mean, how can an employer or an agency be guilty of an unfair labor practice by refusing to appear before a panel that says it doesn't have jurisdiction?
Exactly.
Well,
the panel shrugs, and that's not an unfair labor practice.
Please, you would file a refusal to bargain and say they'd say we're refusing to bargain only because the FSIP doesn't have jurisdiction, and the issue would be joined.
Unfortunately not. The predicate is a refusal to cooperate with the FSIP, and if the FSIP is just shrugging their shoulders, it's pretty hard to accuse anybody of.
To say the general counsel couldn't have issued a complaint? On your charge?
Well, there were a bunch of components. I think they should have issued a complaint for the very reason that Judge Edwards said. And I didn't do it, but some of my colleagues did. They wrote letters to the general counsel saying the D.C. Circuit wants an answer to this question. You know, this isn't a run-of-the-mill case. We need a final answer to this. And you can see how much good it did us.
Not the first agency that told us to go fish.
I get told it all the time. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Osmond.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. At counsel table is AUSA Craig Lawrence, who's representing the Federal Aviation Administration.
The FAA as well?
Pardon me?
You speak for the FAA as well?
No, I do not speak for the FAA. I speak for the FLRA and the FSIP. The Court ruled that there would be one counsel per side arguing. 3 years ago, this Court was faced with the essentially identical case and held that the district court did not have jurisdiction to resolve this dispute. Nothing in the circumstances of this case warrants a different result. First of all, it's beyond dispute that decisions of the panel and decisions of the authority's general counsel are not subject to judicial review.
But in the complaint in this case, they're not challenging a decision of the panel.
Well, I think they. I think.
Where? Show me some language where they are. It's a completely different complaint than the last time around. They're saying. They don't mention a decision. They say this is a suit for declaratory judgment to confirm the jurisdiction. Whereas in the earlier case, they were actually seeking relief against the decision of the FSIP. Here they're not.
Oh, I think, as the district court said, in realistic terms, they are.
Why don't you show me in the complaint where they are? Have you compared the two complaints? The old complaint said, here's what it said in the introduction. It said, plaintiffs seek to remedy the January 9 decision of the panel by which the panel refused to assert jurisdiction. Okay? And then they say the FSIP decisions are contrary to law. And then in the prayer for relief, they want to declare that the FSIP decisions are in violation of specific provisions of the statute. They ask to order the panel to proceed forthwith. This complaint doesn't say anything like that at all. It doesn't mention a decision. They say they're seeking a declaratory judgment. This action is brought to resolve a longstanding dispute in the prayer for relief. They don't mention any decisions.
Well, I think that's right. This was on page 11 of the joint appendix, count one, paragraph 26. The FSIP's refusal to exercise its mandatory junction, its mandatory impasse resolution jurisdiction, has denied, et cetera, et cetera. So they do point to the decision. If you look at the prayer for relief, paragraph two, they ask the district court to enjoin.
They don't say anything about the injunction in their brief here. I think they've probably given that up. I don't think they're proceeding, seeking any injunctive relief. There's nothing to enjoin anyway. This dispute's over, isn't it?
I wanted a perspective. I thought injunction that they could hear future disputes.
But I think it
isn't. You agree that the dispute's over, don't you?
Excuse me, Your
this
Honor?
Dispute's over, right?
And
in this case, there is no
if
unlike the last case.
There's nothing.
Perhaps
pending.
You can ask if
nothing pending at the FSIP.
Right.
There's nothing pending at the FSIP.
And what was pending at the FSIP was not be coming back.
Right.
We heard that from Mr. Osborne a few moments ago.
That's right. So then this is perspective, and now it starts to sound like what they're asking for is an advisory opinion. That there's nothing out there. Then that's
well,
all they're asking for.
The FSIP
for.
Has twice been presented with a situation that they say is likely to recur, and it's twice given its answer, so we know what its interpretation of the law is. And if it's wrong, why not say so?
Because the exclusive avenue to answer this question, which is what this court unequivocally held in the first NATCA case, is through the authorities, through the statute's unfair labor practice.
That's because in the previous case there was a decision that was being challenged. Here there isn't.
No, if you look at the history of this case, NATCA did, in pursuing this case and this decision of the impasses panel, went to the authority, went to the general counsel. The general counsel didn't issue a complaint. That's the UOP proceeding. And as Judge Ginsburg said, clearly this court knew in NATCA 1, NATCA 2, however it's described, that the UOP proceeding goes through the general counsel.
I don't get it now. I admit I was on that panel, but how can it be an unfair labor practice for the FAA to refuse to engage in procedures before the impasse panel when the impasse panel says we're not going to exercise jurisdiction? How can that be an unfair labor practice?
It's an A5, 3116 A5 violation to refuse to bargain in good faith.
Wait a minute. How can that be bad faith to refuse to engage in an arbitration type proceeding that the arbitrator says I don't have jurisdiction? What are they supposed to do?
The panel did not say they do not have jurisdiction.
They said we're not exercising jurisdiction.
Because
what's the difference?
Because our jurisdiction is unclear and it needs to be resolved in an appropriate forum, which is the UOP under the federal sector.
It occurred to me while you were talking, there's a Supreme Court case very analogous to this, the name of which I can't remember. It's in the 1940s, and it's an ICC case, I think. Went to the Supreme Court of the United States. It was a situation very analogous to this where the ICC just refused to refused to exercise jurisdiction over an area of trucking, I think it was. And the Supreme Court, went ahead and they decided whether they had jurisdiction or didn't have jurisdiction. What's the difference between that case and this one?
Well, to be honest, Your Honor, I'm not familiar with that case and the grounds upon which it was decided. But
the Supreme Court examined the organic statute of the agency, and decided whether they had jurisdiction or not. What's the difference?
The question here is whether the district court.
Right.
Had jurisdiction over this underlying dispute. And the district court, relying heavily on the first NATCA decision, held that it did not have jurisdiction. Understand, with respect to declaratory judgment, you've got to establish jurisdiction independently to even get to the question of whether declaratory judgment is appropriate or not. And under NATCA 1, they haven't made it here.
This is a controversy arising under federal law.
However, Your Honor,
is it not a controversy arising under federal law?
It is. However,
it is. Then 1331 gives the court jurisdiction.
However, in Brewer And in the NLRB case that we cite, Beverly Health, this court has held where you have a specific statutory scheme that precludes review of agency actions,
but there's no
then
agency
general federal
action
question
here. There's no
jurisdiction
agency,
doesn't hold.
There's no agency action here.
Which is a problem, but not for you.
Well, if there's clearly the problem here is what the FISIP did, and that's the agency action that's at issue here. If there's no agency action, if all this is to get this court to make a declaration without an underlying issue, underlying case, then we're asking for an advisory opinion.
Let me go back just a second to something Judge Randolph was
saying. Can I just follow through on that?
Sure,
if there's no agency action, that's your answer is not, it seems to me, not the correct answer, the advisory opinion. If there's no agency action, then the APA doesn't apply, right?
Does not apply. That's
does
correct.
Not apply. And if the APA doesn't apply, there's been no waiver of sovereign immunity, in which case you win.
We would certainly take that. Yeah. The FAA argued the sovereign immunity issue.
Mr. Blanford,
yes.
I don't know how this works with the FLRA as opposed to the Labor Board. If the FLRA certifies a unit that, in the union's view, is inappropriate. And
in the union's view, or
in the union's view,
okay.
Is inappropriate. Well, I guess they would have petitioned for it. In the employer's view, is inappropriate. Okay. The employer's remedy is to refuse to bargain. Is it not?
That's right.
In good faith, and then its argument is it had no obligation to bargain because it wasn't a proper unit.
That's correct.
All right. Now,
and the same
how would
applies.
That be analogous here?
The same applies in the federal sector.
So here, Judge Randolph was suggesting there was no way for the union to seek redress through a charge because the employer was doing what the FSIP the FSIP refused to get involved. If it wasn't the employer's bad faith.
But first
could
of all,
the general counsel, could the general counsel have issued a complaint?
Yes, the general counsel could have issued a complaint. The general counsel did not.
What would that complaint have looked like?
It would have been a refusal to bargain in good faith. On the federal sector, participation and in the impasses panel proceedings are part of the obligation to bargain. It extends through impasses. This court has affirmed an
authority decision on that. Not if the impasse panel doesn't have jurisdiction.
But that's the agency's defense. The defense is that they do not have jurisdiction. That
no, they said they weren't going to exercise jurisdiction. That's my defense.
I don't think that is a defense. I think that by challenging, don't forget the FAA challenged the FISIP's jurisdiction, and by taking that legal stand, just as in representation cases, employers argue that units are inappropriate.
Look, if the impasse panel exercised jurisdiction, right, and the FAA continued to believe they didn't have it, the FAA has a clear remedy. It just refuses to participate in the proceedings. An unfair labor practice charge is brought. The thing goes through your agency and ultimately comes up to us.
That's right. Right?
If the impasse panel refuses to exercise jurisdiction, the union, under your theory, has no remedy.
No, the union has the remedy it sought here. It goes to
the agency, the impasse panel, I've changed the hypothetical. The impasse panel says, we have no jurisdiction. Now, what's the union to do?
Well, one thing, the panel does not do that because...
Wait a minute. It did it in my hypothetical. It just did it.
That's right. True. That's true. But it's a hypothetical which I think is precluded because under...
Wait a minute.
The question of whether or not the panel has jurisdiction is, in a sense, an obligation to bargain question.
The impasse panel says, we have no jurisdiction. Now, what's the union to do? Now, you say that's a hypothetical, right? And I agree.
Right.
What's the union to do?
If they have a remedy, it's through the unfair labor practice proceedings.
What's the unfair labor practice?
No, I thought your answer is there is no remedy. Isn't that your answer?
Well,
I mean, under the statute, there's no remedy, right? End of case.
Decisions of the panel are not
reviewable. That's the way the statute's written,
that's
right?
That's correct. Okay, this is panel decisions, right. Not reviewable.
What's the appropriate forum that the FSIP is talking about? Do you know?
Well, the FSIP didn't opine about that at all.
Sure
but,
it did.
But this
I'm
court.
I'm quoting from it. It said, in our view, such questions, which appear to involve questions of statutory interpretation, must be addressed in an appropriate forum.
What I'm saying is they didn't
I'm asking you, if they had said it, I wouldn't need to ask you what the appropriate forum is. What did they mean by that? Do you have any idea?
Some forum that has
what
jurisdiction.
Is that forum?
And the forum is
what?
The UOP proceeding.
Okay, that's suppose the general counsel, but if the general counsel decides not to issue a UOP, that's the end of the case.
That's the end of the case. That's
okay,
correct.
So you think that's the only, that's, all right. So that's what you think appropriate forum means there. Why didn't they just say that? Maybe they meant declaratory judgment by a federal court.
I think, as I say, there's nothing to indicate what they meant. I think the
panel is not
an adjudicatory body that would really, they said in an appropriate forum, I think that was out of.
That was what?
Out of, they didn't identify a forum. There's no way of speculating as to what was in the panel's mind.
I was just asking what you thought it might mean.
Pardon me?
I was just asking what you thought it might mean.
I think it means the authorities' UOP proceedings.
Okay,
there's case law out there.
You and I just agreed that can only be resolved that way if the general counsel issues a UOP.
No, it's resolved when the general counsel does not issue a complaint. There's tons of case law under the National Labor Relations Act that says the UOP proceeding is
suppose the general counsel doesn't issue because he says the panel doesn't have jurisdiction.
Excuse me?
Okay, so he chooses. Let's assume the union had now gone back and asked for a UOP again, okay? General counsel said no because the panel doesn't have jurisdiction, in my judgment, right?
That's a possibility.
Okay, so that's not reviewable, right? But if the general counsel said it does have jurisdiction, then the issue could go and be resolved by the FLRA, right? And we would review that decision.
And you would review that.
And the FLRA would get Chevron deference, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so the way this works in your structure is that if the FLRA decides the case, it gets Chevron. It decides that there is jurisdiction, right? It gets Chevron deference. But if the general counsel decides there is no jurisdiction, it decides the statutory question by itself.
Well, it doesn't decide the statutory question in any sort of binding manner. It's simply a prosecutor.
You just agreed that if he doesn't issue a ULP because he says the FSIP has no jurisdiction, that's the end of the case.
That is the end of the case.
So he's made a final, the general counsel has made a final interpretation of the statute.
And that
can't
is
be reviewed by
and that is the procedure that Congress has determined is appropriate.
Would Congress
in
want to set up a procedure like that?
Yeah, that doesn't make
what
any
the,
sense.
What
well,
the
it, it's the same procedure as in the National Labor Relations Act.
No, it's that, not.
That
no, it's
unfair labor practice. As far as the finality
what,
of general
what's
counsel
immune, what's immune from judicial review is the general counsel's judgment about whether a particular fact situation requires a ULP. Certainly not his interpretation of the statute.
And not whether the NLRB has jurisdiction.
The refusal to issue a complaint is a prosecutorial determination that may be based on a number of things. And if the general counsel in refusing to issue a complaint opines about the statute, that's one reason, but that is unreviewable just as much as if it had simply been a matter of resources or other sorts of prosecutorial.
But it wouldn't be unreviewable if he reached the opposite decision. I mean, does that make any sense to you at all?
That's true in the labor board, too, isn't it?
I mean, this is the scheme that Congress gave us for resolving.
I was only asking about whether the scheme makes sense when the decisions are questions of statutory interpretation, not general counsel judgments about whether a particular set of facts requires a UOP.
I think it does make sense, and I think the POPA decision, which reaffirmed the lack of reviewability of general counsel decisions, reject certain interpretations that would allow for qualification of when it's when a GC decision is reviewable and when it's not.
What if this case, this is very much like this case, but what if the only action here were a suit by the union against the FAA claiming that there's a case or controversy because the FAA will not go to an impasse panel and on the basis that the impasse panel doesn't have jurisdiction, the union claims it does. That's it. The suit is just between the FAA and the union to compel arbitration or whatever you call it, impasse right. negotiation. What's the jurisdictional objection to that?
Karahalias.
Huh?
The Supreme Court decision in Karahalias, which is cited throughout our brief, Karahalias said that there is no private right of action to enforce rights under the statute. Unlike the National Labor Relations Act that has Section 302 that permits private suits to enforce collective bargaining obligations, there is no 301 in the federal statute, and Karahalias holds clearly that you can't bring that private right of action. There is no analogy to private suits to compel arbitration. I think that's clearly been resolved.
Okay. I'll look at that.
You have anything else ready? Okay.
Thank you.
I think your time's up. Does he have any time left?
No, he does not.
You can take 2 minutes or until Judge Ginsburg comes back.
No, I'm.
Which ever occurs later.
I'm frankly happy to waive rebuttal unless you have questions or questions.
I have one question for you.
Should we wait for Judge Ginsburg?
No, go ahead. Okay. He told us to go ahead.
In your suit, you're invoking the APA, the Administrative Procedure Act.
I'm trying to think if we did or didn't.
Yeah, you did.
I'm not sure. We did 1331,
right?
And we did the Declaratory Judgment Act to 2201.
And didn't you? Invoke,
I'm not sure. I'm not
I
sure.
I thought you invoked the APA. For,
I'm not sure. I'd have
in
to
response
look at the
to the sovereign immunity claim.
That was the one point I was going to make. I've got to get to Sibley Hospital in about an hour. That's why I'm kind of hustling here.
Oh.
But the one point I was going to make is I understand the decision in Trudeau in this circuit.
Yeah.
It says the APA waives sovereign immunity for non-monetary claims, including those that are not brought under the APA.
Okay.
That's what I understand Trudeau to say.
Okay. All right.
I was just saying that I have.
But there's no FAA action here, right?
Right. And
or is there? When the FAA announced in a letter or whatever it was that they didn't have. That the their position is that the impasse panel has no jurisdiction. Isn't that an interpretive rule?
I can't
under the APA.
I can't guess at that question, Your Honor.
It's a final decision by the FAA, and it doesn't have to be through rules.
I'm not ready to concur. I got a note from my colleague saying that there are ongoing negotiations in a number of those bargaining units and no impasses.
I want to just ask you a quick question about
sure,
the standing question that we went by so quickly before. So if we have lots of cases here, you know, environmental groups bring petitions challenging the EPA's decision that it doesn't have authority to regulate a particular kind of, say, cement kiln, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the agency made that decision, and the cement kilns participated in it. So when they bring a petition for review here, do they have standing to sue the cement kilns also?
Do we have standing? Would we have
standing? Do you have standing to sue the FAA? That's my question.
I think we would have standing. I think there's a preemption problem. I think there's federal question jurisdiction. It arises under federal law. I think we would have standing, and I think it's all preempted. All that stuff is preempted.
Preempted by what?
Preempted by a series of cases, including the case that they cited to you this week, Feilbach, that matters under the, you know, that for particular problems, the FLRA is preemptive. And what we are doing is asking a question about the FLRA's jurisdiction, which is a separate matter.
Do you agree with the counsel for the FLRA's interpretation of the Karahalias case?
Karahalias is a Supreme Court case, and what the issue before the court was, in federal sector labor law, the duty of fair representation can be enforced either at the board or in federal court. In Carharlios, the federal sector union said, we think the same rules should apply for federal employees. They should have a fair representation remedy in court and at the FLRA. And the Supreme Court said, they are different statutes, they're written differently, they have a different purpose. The answer for private sector is one thing, and the answer to the federal sector is another thing.
Yeah, so what's that got to do with this case?
We didn't cite it.
Okay.
Thank you for your generosity.
Thank you, Mr. Osborne, Mr. Blanford. Thank you. The case is submitted.
Thank you.